and welcome to this final podcast of Impact Frameworks and Cultural Change 2021. This podcast will reflect on the conference, how it all began, and what we learnt. Please keep the conversation going on Twitter using hashtag Impact Frameworks.
It's fantastic that tonight I'm joined by Jess Romer, who was the originator of this conference with me after discussions in December 2019, and one of the organizing committee members, Sean Len from the Health Foundation. So Jess, do you remember the Impact board meeting we had in December 9th? It's a long time ago when we first talked about this event.
Has been. But yeah, I do remember it very well. I think initially, Mark, we were both hoping this will be a face-to-face in-person event in London. And actually, because of the pandemic, it turned out to be this year and online, which I think actually worked really well because we went from potentially engaging a smaller number of people, primarily based in the UK, to actually engaging a wide range of people across the globe. So I think that was an unintended but really positive effect. And I'm really happy to see people engaging over social media, both Twitter, LinkedIn, with the pre-recorded content available yesterday. So it's been amazing. What do you think in terms of...
No, I've loved it. I think you're right. I think if we kept to the original schedule of holding it in October last year, face-to-face without a pandemic, I'm sure we would have got 50 or 60 people to come along. There would have been a nice conference dinner, which is the one thing I think we all do miss. But we've had over 650 people join the site today from the UK, Canada, America, across Europe. And then with the networking sessions, I had a fantastic conversation with a delegate from Kenya. That would not have happened without the pandemic. Sean, have you found it on the international side?
Yeah, I mean, I would completely agree. There's been people that have joined that just wouldn't have been able to attend had we had an in-person conference. Again, people from all over the globe in the networking session that I was in, people internationally attending the sessions, which I think is a real benefit. Pine a little bit for some of that in-person contact during the networking, but I think all in all, it's been a great event and a great format.
Yeah, I think the format has worked, actually. I'm not quite sure whether either you had any chance to listen to some of the podcasts that were made in the vodcast, but the vodcast went down very well. Jess, I can say that yours was particularly popular. You got loads of views. Sean, you too. And some of the tweets we've got over the past 24 hours have recognized some of the learning from those vodcasts themselves. Did you enjoy making your vodcasts?
Sean, do you want to...
There you are. You can take the silence from that as you will. It's interesting. I'm not entirely sure I'm ever cut out to be a newsreader, but it's interesting to sort of share thoughts on the conference and your hopes and aspirations, which is always nice to let people know in advance and also carry on those conversations. So from that perspective, yeah, certainly.
I think that we're all flexing different muscles during the pandemic, and especially with online conferences, right? Picking up new IT skills and learning to use a wide range of online platforms, which is, a welcome addition to our skill set.
I think so. I didn't realize that Zoom had a webinar system until this conference came along. And the power of the webinar system, I think, has been proven over the past day. In fact, from starting this morning, because, as you say, it's become an international conference, we got Tamika Hyden to join the organizing committee from Research Impact Academy in Australia, which meant we started at 2 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, but 3 a.m. this morning, which meant a very early start, 2:30 a.m. for a couple of colleagues. And nerves, obviously, because at 2:30 a.m., if something goes wrong, who do you call? But it was fantastic. And I think Tamika's early showing went down extremely well. Followed by my breakfast networking, which was very bizarre. Seven or eight people joined with virtual cups of tea and virtual bacon sandwiches. which is was a lovely session before Sean. I think you were on at 8:30.
Indeed, yes, the early session for us based in the UK, and it was great to have Annette Boas from London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine and James Wilsdon from Sheffield University to join me for that early session. So thanks again to them. And some really interesting points put across, particularly about Annette reflecting on her experience of working as part of the government Office of Science in the UK government, and her reflections on actually, you know, sort of a really positive experience and a lot of learning to take forward, but also a real willingness to engage between both the policy side, but also the research community to help that sort of that policy research interaction. And then James posed, I believe it was 5 very interesting sort of paradoxes of the use of research and evidence, and particularly as we move through pre, but also the post pandemic period, and how we sort of maybe reframe some of our thinking around the way evidence is sort of collected, shared, and used, but also sort of the types of knowledge that people are looking to sort of bring to some of those policy discussions.
I think James is a fascinating individual, by the way, because he also does a lot in the research and research field with the Wellcome Trust, if I understand, yes. So he's a big Wellcome Trust type person. And of course, after 8:30, we had the Impact Framework session, the original idea anyway for this conference. Jess, how did you find your time?
Yeah, it was really exciting. And I think we had a nice panel. So I was joined by Anne Rivers from NIHR and Dr. Alison Tweed, as well as Dr. Grace Sweeney from NHS England and Improvement Directorate. And I had the opportunity to present on the Wellcome Trust Impact Framework. And yeah, I think the participants really engaged with the content. There were really good questions, I suppose. What I will highlight at the moment is a couple of things that came up in the session that were also echoed somewhere else. And there is something about the implementation of frameworks as well, but more specifically, I think there's a very strong call for systems thinking and the use of system-based approaches to allow us to better deal with complex, long systemic change, and also the use of theories of change, logic models, or anything else that starts conversations by clarifying what is it that we want to achieve, what kind of impact, change, and figuring out what is the best way to contribute to that change. Case studies came up particularly as a way to deal with long-term systemic change, to kind of deal with quantitative and qualitative data in ways that create stories that people can really engage with and really help communicate things that otherwise is very difficult to do, particularly through visuals as well. List a kind of useful in terms of methodologies, journal impact as measure of quality of research was one of those. Mark, as you remarked in one of your podcasts on public and patient engagement, using numbers to evidence outcomes is not good enough, such as, for example, just counting the members of the public participating in research. We really need to go beyond. So I think everyone was saying similar things. We really need to go beyond just outputs tracking and finding better ways to engage with systems. I say with that.
It was definitely a powerful session. I've tried to watch as much as possible today while doing some of the Impact Conference elves work in the background, so to speak. But it was very enjoyable, equally, to see the learning across the 3 organisations represented. You know, the Wellcome Trust has a framework, Anthony England has a framework, NIHR are developing one as we speak. And the overlap of understanding, I thought, was extremely powerful. Sean, did you get a chance to join that session, or were you busy preparing for your second session of the day, the Great Debate at Midday?
No, I did get to join the session that Jess ran. Again, really interesting to hear the different organisations, how they've sort of been approaching developing the impact framework. And yeah, I mean, the Health Foundation's, like a lot of organisations, looking at how we can improve the way we go about sort of trying to capture the impact of our own work. So it was really interesting to hear how other organizations have been going through that journey. But yes, I mean, the great debate at High Noon, GMT was another interesting one for me. I remember when we had the conversation back, well, it would have been last year, about the policy session, and I suggested a sort of a moral maze type sort of format, and really pleased with that. And I think all credit to Jonathan, Ian, and Jude for joining that session. When we came up with the title, I was a little bit apprehensive about whether we would get everyone to join in, particularly on the proposer side. But fair play that Ian was more than happy to be involved in that. And again, the same with Jude and Jonathan chairing. And I think what was really encouraging is that there was a sort of an open, friendly, honest debate around whether we should be continuing to have dedicated impact sections within the funding application. Interesting to see the sort of the very small sample before and after that we did, that Jude managed to hold on to basically the nose that we shouldn't be removing it, although the gap was significantly sort of reduced, which is an interesting finding. And I think the key things from that, and you can't argue with a lot of sort of Ian's points about, you know, the need to reduce the burden in the application process for some people. I mean, there were questions about just moving it from one part of the form to the other. How does that reduce the burden? But I think as a funder ourselves, we would need to recognise that probably more needs to be done to maybe support people at that application stage. But it's also interesting to hear about how it's really important to support those that are actually reviewing the applications, to really support a meaningful assessment and sort of friendly challenge to the application, so that the people that are putting in the application can actually receive the most useful feedback, but we're confident that it's the best proposal it can be. And also the importance of bringing in those wider audiences to that. So I know most funders now have patient service users and people with lived experience on their panels, but how we can actually bring that into a more meaningful way and ensure everyone involved in that process is sort of fully on board with that was, I think, really useful. And some really insightful conversations came out of that session.
I think it's a fascinating point. It's not just the application form, who actually reviews the application form. And I think that does need to be taken into account. I think we have a BBC News, exactly. One of those moments. For me, Sean, it could be my 18-year-old coming in at any minute. So I think yours is cuter. But I just, it is an important thing, because it's not about the application form, it's the system overall. And it's intriguing that you mentioned about support for people who actually look at their application forms and actually analyze them. Because it's a piece of work that we've just started recently, looking at a prototype toolkit to help peer reviewers when it comes to impact assessment itself, whether that peer reviewer is one of the great and the good academics or a patient or service user, which we're doing with Julie Bailey from the University of Lincoln and Emerald. There's a bit of work that's started and should be ready in a few months' time to actually look at it, because that's exactly the point. It's not one bit of the system, it's the entire system holistically, I think, you have to look at. I don't know whether you have any thoughts, Jess, about impact sections and application forms.
Yeah, I joined the session and I really like how thought-provoking and a little bit controversial it was. I think it was great. And I think what I really found useful is when we started to ask questions like, why do we want to know about impact from up front? And what is the best way to do that? And therefore, you know, the discussion around whether you have them in the application form and who uses it, for what? So I think they were all valid points. I suppose that's something that we discuss in the networking session that followed from that debate. Again, maybe the role that that kind of information has, not necessarily as assessment for criteria in terms of deciding funding, but to which extent that type of commentary can be used by funders to figure out how we can continue supporting those researchers after the grant, for example, particularly if you're funding basic research, and there's a possibility to go through translational research, and then hitting the ground. I think just having those discussions up front, and again, maybe turning the tables and saying, actually, this is something that funders need to be more aware of and use for plugging in gaps and closing those gaps across the research pathway, for me is a powerful thought as well at the back of that discussion. Hopefully that's making sense.
No, it does. I think all these threads seem to be coming together over the day's events, because after the great debate, we had a session on cultural change run by Paolo Adam from ACWAS. And I thought that was fascinating. I had to dip in and out occasionally of that, but some of the stuff I heard, I think Jordi Malas Galat was quoting Machiavelli at one stage, which is most unusual from my point of view for an impact conference. But it was absolutely fascinating about the cultural change that one would expect or hope from impact assessment, or even having an impact system itself, and who it should be for. I found that a very powerful session, and obviously why are we doing it in that sense. Did either of you guys make that session? I'm assuming you did, but it's been a long day.
I did. I was able to. I don't know if you did, Sean. Do you want to start?
Yeah, I caught some of it, and sort of probably towards the end of the session. And I think it was an interesting point that was made about the sort of the cultural value, because that also links to some of the conversations I was having later on about the sort of the cultural value and measuring sort of cultural impact. Someone I was talking to was referring to the centre in Leeds there, looking at sort of how we can measure the broader sort of cultural change and cultural impact, and how we look at some of that wider sort of, dare I say it, the sort of the more intangibles that often come out of some of the work that don't neatly fit into some of the metrics that often are required and asked for by funders as well as other organisations. And so the importance of thinking about that as well, I think, was a really important point and an interesting one.
Yeah, definitely. Jess?
I think the only thing that I will add is, again, a challenging thought was made that was really calling for a through change across the research system, and really encouraging researchers to go beyond academia and research, to more widely share the work, explain the value of it, and again, ensure that it ultimately leads to impact. But also, there was quite a lot of talk about, again, the role that the public has in the engagement, and whether it's, you know, really playing a meaningful role, or how can we improve that. So those two things really stay with me from that session as well.
Derek Stewart is a fantastic speaker, by the way. I've heard him before. I've always been very moved by his points about public engagement and patient engagement in research, about the fact that there's a danger of it becoming business as usual, and that not enough time is consistently spent about why we do it in the first place, the ethos of engagement. And I think that came through very well in that particular session as well. And then we moved to Gert Balling from Novo Nordisk Foundation's session in the fantastically titled Lessons Learned session, you know, when things go wrong, which, again, I thought was a very brave way of approaching this particular issue, because no one likes to admit they've been wrong. And I thought his session did touch on it quite nicely. Sadly, I had to dip out of that one more than any of the others. So I'm sort of relying, Jess and Sean, on any recollections you may have had of Gert's session, if you had time yourself, because as I said, it has been a long day.
People are going to think that I did nothing, but I was just floating, watching everything.
It's a conference. You've got to go to the webinars.
I had the pleasure to join the session. And I think they did a really good job at kind of articulating very similar messages. And I think one of them was just that it's so difficult to to design and implement impact frameworks, and really requires a level of, you know, change management across the whole organization, but also externally, including your partners, the pool of award holders, and the wider research community. So that was very strong. And again, just all the things that I think they all mentioned were particularly around avoiding a top-down approach only, and really ensuring that you take time and have patience, and take people on a journey. Which means that, you know, you need to do a lot of raising awareness and explaining what this is about and not, particularly because most people will tend to fear this type of impact frameworks and work. There's a fear of being evaluated and what that might mean for your career, for the programs. So really engaging, communicating and building trustworthy relationships was key in terms of all the panelists' words of wisdom. And particularly when it comes to stakeholder engagement, the importance of being transparent, again, particularly with external audiences. But yeah, over to you, Sean, if you have any other thoughts.
Unfortunately, or fortunately, I was on networking duty during GERT
session. You were doing the tea networking session. But there is a connection, actually, Sean, between Jess's observations and the Health Foundation. The over-reliance on top-down, which Jess mentioned. The Health Foundation, about 3 or 4 years ago, published a really nice paper about why innovations don't get adopted back into the National Health Service in England. And one of which was the reliance, the over-reliance of the top-down push and old-fashioned dissemination. So I think Jess's observations are very apposite, considering the work the Health Foundation has done in this particular area a while back. I think we then moved on to the final webinar, which is still, we may have only just finished, with Catherine Graham, which I had to nip out of so that we could do this podcast, partly because if we had to wait until that finished, having been up since 2:30 in the morning, I think this particular podcast host would be falling into his keyboard right now. But I left as David Sweeney was giving an extremely interesting historical review of impact in the sense of where he started in the 90s and almost this passing the ball back from one to another between Australia and the UK on impact assessment. But equally ironically, going back to D'Amica's first session at 3 a.m. GMT, where there's this passing the baby comment came up, that impact is all about passing the baby from one stage to another, which is a comment that Catherine Graham used to use. And ironically, she is doing the final session as we speak. So the baby has been passed all the way through today to Catherine. And again, I don't know whether you've caught any of the first half hour before joining me on this podcast.
So I managed to catch just a little bit of it, but it, I mean, that reflection's really saying it as well, Mark, because it was one of the things that I opened a session with first thing this morning, is that, hey, this is a conversation that's been going on for years, indeed decades, about sort of how we make better use of research knowledge and evidence to support policy. And I think just picking up your point there about the sort of the previous work that the Health Foundation has done about being able to take what we know works in one area and support the sort of the transfer of knowledge and evidence to another area is really important. And as everyone knows, sort of context often trumps everything. And so being able to look more deeply about how you can share impact knowledge and evidence so that you can continue that sort of that building of impact and change from maybe that sort of more micro or meso level up to that more sort of macro policy level, I think is a really important thing and a conversation that is, you know, importantly will continue for probably some time to go.
Thank you for that. Guys, it's been a long day. A lot's been discussed in different webinars and networking sessions, but what about your overall impressions of lessons learned? Jess, can I ask you, first of all, your thoughts on this?
Oh, God. I think we've done a good job at summarizing some of the main things that have percolated throughout the session. I guess things that we haven't yet covered that might be pertinent to flag now is that there's a still not a lot of consensus on what research impact is and what we mean by outcomes. It kept coming back and back throughout the day. But actually, once you start listening to what people suggest as answers to this question, there's a lot of similarities. And basically, it's something that we're now describing as going beyond the academic and research sector is having policy and health practice change. And it's ultimately about improving health and people's lives. So I think we do have a working kind of definition for research impact. And there's, I suspect there's probably a lot more convergence than we perhaps feel at any given point. And I'd just like to say something else that is more about kind of looking forwards, I suppose, and into the future post-COVID. I feel that all of this conference, but particularly the context in which we're living at the moment, has really demonstrated that we can shorten time to impact as long as we have very clear outcome-oriented discussions in mind, and that's how we start working together, linking and mobilizing the diverse stakeholders across the systems that we need to make health impact, particularly moving from the academic and research sector. For example, we've seen a lot of data sharing partnerships that weren't there before and have been crucial to advance research, but also securing private sector partnerships, again, to kind of make sure that there's not a gap or a stop in the pipeline from research to production, but also early engagement with policy stakeholders and sustaining that relationship to encourage as much as we can the evidence-based driven decision making. And last but not least, I feel that there's been a real effort to translate science and research to lay audiences, proactively addressing misinformation and finding ways to motivate behavioral change and vaccine uptake. So I think all of these are very crucial ingredients that I hope we continue to kind of use for other areas in the research and health systems, and that we can continue creating transformative, large-scale change at reduced timelines.
Excellent summary there, Jess. Sure, anything you want to add from your perspective, lessons learned over the past couple of days?
Yeah, I mean, I would echo everything that Jesse said there. I think sort of things additionally to add into that is, and maybe perhaps preaching to the converted, is just that the importance of giving it the space and the resource and sort of really recognising that the impact agenda isn't a nice to have. It's a specialist area. It requires some skill and some support, and that needs to be sort of built in and factored into the work rather than just sort of on top of the day job that other people are doing or the research projects that they're managing. And I think probably the other thing to add to that reflections over the last couple of days is just the sort of the transdisciplinary learning that can be had. So the learning that sort of health and care research can offer to other sectors, but also the learning that other sectors, education, for example, could sort of offer to health and care as a sector and the impact agenda there. They would be sort of the other things that I would add on top of that.
Yeah, I think that's true. The networking sessions that have been held today, which worked incredibly well. I wasn't quite sure whether just an open Zoom call would work, but those small groups, the discussions that occurred, and the fact that, you know, I met people who have nothing to do with health and social care, but they are interested in impact. And the fact there were things to learn across the piece, I think is very powerful. And something about the health and social care impact hinterland, we need to make sure we are not inward looking, because it's a big area, but we could still do double speak if we're not careful. I thought the networking sessions were very powerful to remind us that there's more than just us. I think that was very, very powerful to hear. And personally, I liked the mixed economy, the structure of what we've done over the past couple of days, the live webinars, the informal networking, the videos you guys pre-recorded, which did work, had an effect. People enjoyed them. People were commenting about them, and the podcasts themselves. You know, I think that meant that there was something for everyone, as cliche as that sounds. But I do think it's been an extremely interesting couple of days. And I look forward to finishing off a legacy website. So all the webinars, and all the stuff we've learned can be available for people for a few more months at least to download. I don't know whether there are any final comments. We've been talking for half an hour, and it seems like this might be a good time to wrap up the podcast. Jess, you first. Any final thoughts or comments before we turn in for a decent weekend, one hopes?
Well, I'd like to finish by giving you a huge thanks, Mark, to you and your team, particularly Arvashi Sharma and Alita Wong. You guys have done an amazing job at helping us plan, implement, and troubleshoot throughout the conference. And honestly, we couldn't have done it without you. So a huge thanks and appreciation on behalf of the whole organizing committee. That's really what I wanted to say.
that's incredibly kind.
I can say no more.
All I can say actually is that the organizing committee were a fantastic bunch of people to work with. So obviously you, Jess, you, Sean, and Tamika, and Paola, and Catherine, and Gert. It's been a pleasure. Once we nailed down the format, and we began to therefore talk, about what we were going to put into it, it's been a blast. And it's been a complete pleasure. I think, as everyone knows, I'm stepping down as head of Impact for NIHR to move on to a different position within the organization. And this is definitely my last lap. And it's down to you guys. It's been a fabulous last lap. So before the Mutual Appreciation Society goes over the top, Jess and Sean, thank you very much for joining me for this final conference roundout. I hope everyone who's listened to this has enjoyed this podcast and also everything else that this wonderful organizing committee has put together over the past 2 days.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and all the other content produced and provided by NIHR, the Wellcome Trust, the Health Foundation, ACWAS, Novo Nordisk Foundation, and the Research Impact Academy. Keep checking the website, impactframeworks.info, and the hashtag Impact Frameworks on Twitter for all news and updates.